You're listening to
Hey, howdy, hello, what's up, what's new, what's going on? This is Sci-Fi Dig, show 330. I am your host, Aaron Makem, and we have a lot of fantastic summer science fiction and genre-related films coming up. I'm really excited. I don't normally get this pumped for, like, summer movie season. I know we have a lot of single listeners. No big deal for you guys to get together, gals, and run to the theater and see a film. Well, usually when we go, there's about four of us. We went to see a movie that... We went to see Evil Dead. I'm going to get into Evil Dead in just a second. We went to see Evil Dead this weekend, for example. And, you know, there's four of us. We went to the matinee. And by the time you get, like, four small sodas or three small sodas, or if you're going to split a soda, and, you know, we buy the popcorn bucket that you can refill for, you know, a few bucks, and then nobody actually eats the popcorn. But anyway, by the time it was all said and done, we were in for 50 bucks. So 50 bucks, I could go buy two brand new Blu-rays and we could sit at home and watch them. But with that being said, I'm not knocking the theater experience because there's a lot to be said for it. I mean, there's a lot of things about it I enjoy. I just don't get super pumped. I kind of figure if there's a lot of good movies out, I really pick out the movies that I want to see and that I will see. And I'll just wait for the Blu-ray on the rest. I mean, the upside is that usually the Blu-ray release is right around the corner for almost every movie. Pretty much right now you can go to Amazon and the new G.I. Joe film, you can pre-order on Blu-ray. And, you know, they give release dates pretty quick. I know it's not quite the same, and you don't have that unaffected by outside source experience. You know, you can't sit home, you got to worry about, you know, do I need to take the dog out? You know, do I need to, you know, open a window? Do I need to turn the heater on? Do I, you know, there's just a bunch of little things at home you're constantly pausing. It's not the same experience. But we have so many good movies coming out this summer, so many things that I am stoked for. And, you know, of course, you know, my top movie that I cannot wait for. My top two are, of course, Trek 2 and Iron Man 3. I'm excited to see both of these. The other movies that I wanted to see was G.I. Joe, and I also wanted to see Evil Dead. Now, I took the kids to see G.I. Joe, and we had a good time. I mean, the movie, you know, pretty much kind of check your brain at the door kind of deal. You know, you don't, you're going to go, you're going to be entertained. That's all that matters. I can nitpick this movie apart. There are so many things that are wrong. There's so many continuity issues. There are so many, things that you're like, well, there's no way somebody would really do that. But that's not the point. The point is it's just a good action shoot 'em up flick. I had a really good time. I really enjoyed it. And you know me, when I review a movie or when I rate a movie, I put everything in certain categories. You know, there's movies that are just fun that I might give 5 stars, but if I rate everything equally, it might get 2. You know, if it's kind of dull, but it has, like, you know, some hardcore science fiction, I might put it in that category and give it a 5 stars. But normally I might rate that a 3, you know. So, and I try to let you know that when I'm rating films. But G.I. Joe was just good fun. We went to see Evil Dead. I've been really waiting for Evil Dead for a long time. You know, those, I can think back probably 150, 200 episodes ago of Sci-Fi Dig when I talked about there being a new Evil Dead film and to talk about it and how they were going to produce it. Or, you know, start production on it, and then it just kind of never took off. Then they were going to do the reboot, and then they were going to do a sequel, and then finally, you know, we had this issue here where there were some lawsuits around and etc. But, you know, I didn't have any expectations. I just thought it'd be a fun film to take, you know, to go see with the family. And I thought if my daughter really liked it, we'd sit down and watch the original one together at some point. And man, I was blown away. I give this movie 5 stars, 5 digger shovels out of 5. It had everything that I wanted. It paid all the homage it needed to pay. And they did it by not duplicating things, but by, you know, those of you that are fans of Evil Dead, I mean, fans enough to know the background to appreciate what they did with that film. If you read Bruce Campbell's biography, I think it's called Leading With My Chin. A great book, by the way. If you like making movies, it's a great book just to show what they went through before digital, you know. But it's just a great book of looking back on the Evil Dead experience. There's a lot of information in there about that, as well as other things, you know, his life and stuff too. But I really enjoyed that part of it. You know, they didn't have a lot of money, so what they did was they just had as much, I don't want to say gore, because I never thought Evil Dead was super gory. It is just, because gore to me is more like blood and guts and stuff. like, you know, like intestines. To me, that's gore. This is just like a lot of bodily fluids, right? I mean, there's just so much liquid in this film, different colored liquids. And they really amp that up for the movie, The New Evil Dead. And it wasn't done in a super cheesy way. I mean, you had a couple of, there were things there was like, there's no way that could really happen, but it didn't really matter. It was just really good fun and actually had a decent story behind it. For those of you, I don't think this is a spoiler. I'm just going to give you the setup of the movie so you know what's happening. The setup of the movie and why it really worked is basically there's some friends and somebody is a drug addict and she wants to detox. And so they go to the family's old cabin that nobody's been to in years, you know, which is the Evil Dead cabin. And the idea is that they're going to sit it out there with her while she throws the rest of her drugs down a well, and she's going to sit there and she's going to detox. They're going to be here with her, and then she'll be done. And that's kind of the whole premise of the film, why they go to the cabin, you know, as opposed to going to have a good time and party or whatever. They go there for the exact opposite reason, right? And then things kind of go crazy from there. But it was so much fun, such a good movie. And as much as I enjoyed it, I thought, you know, usually when I get done with a film, I stop and think, man, do I want to see this movie again? And initially I was like, no, I don't know if I want to see it again. But now a couple of days later, I'm thinking, man, I would like to see this again. So maybe I'll either rent this on Blu-ray or wait till it comes out. I mean, when I buy my Blu-rays, I wait till they're on sale. I know a lot of people, I listen to a lot of different podcasts, talk to a lot of different people, and I know a lot of people are into streaming. And man, it sure would be nice if that worked flawlessly for me. I would stream everything, but it does not. I have DSL and it does not work flawlessly. I can watch a half hour television show without a problem. If I'm watching a movie, there's a lot of stutter steps. The quality is just not there. And so Blu-ray is going to be the way to go for me right now. Anyhow, so we have the new Trek, and this, you know, this is a good news story for talking about summer movies. Fans were so pumped up to go see this that they actually crashed the IMAX website trying to get tickets. I think that says a lot about how well this movie is going to do. I think it's going to be a blockbuster. I think all the Trek fans are going to see it. I think initial sales, even if the movie is absolutely horrible, I think it's going to be enough to turn a profit on this. And let's face it, I sincerely doubt they're going to suddenly decide to not make a Trek 3. I think they'd be kind of silly not to do, you know, to try not to do that. That's kind of an interesting, I think it's really going to show how well this movie is going to do. It's just really, I'm really pumped to see it. Man of Steel, I cannot wait to see that. There's a couple of other taking over the Oval Office or, you know, the United States going to hell kind of movies coming out. World War Z looks good. I don't know if it's something I'd go to the theater and see, but I think that the kids want to see it. So definitely I will take them. You know, I never say no to taking somebody to a movie unless it's a chick flick and I try everything I can to get out of it. But my daughter owes me a couple because I sat through all the Twilight movies. So she's going to go see some other movies with me, whether she wants to or not, because, well, she owes me because I sat through those. And I think she owes me like 50 movies for each one of those I sat through. Pretty excited about Superman. Cannot wait to see what they're going to do with that. The reason I'm excited, now keep in mind, I have not read a whole lot about this movie. I watched like little teaser trailers, but I haven't read a whole lot about it. But the thing that has me excited is, and I could be completely off base here, and if I am, I don't even want to know. I'm going to go in as blind as possible. It seems to me as though this film, what they're doing is they're kind of just jumping in with their own story. They're not going to, we're not going to rehash the origin yet again. You know, we're going to kind of jump in and all the material, all the Superman material out there, it seems like every movie goes over the same material. And, you know, we did it once right in 78. And now, there's no reason to keep going over that because that movie still holds up today, still is a great film. And same thing with Superman 2. I like both cuts. I kind of like the Donner cut much better. I know I'm sometimes an odd man out on that, but I really like the Donner cut of Superman 2 better than what was presented to us. But just great. Those are great films. And actually, the Superman stuff, I keep thinking about buying a box set because I'd like to have them all. But right now, the only Superman film I actually have is Superman 2, the Donner cut. That's the only one I own on DVD. And I always keep waiting for that set to come on sale real cheap, and I'm picking it up at some point. But I really would like to sit down and just do like a marathon though. Just mainline them for, you know, the whole week. Watch one movie a night for the whole week and get them all in. Even Superman Returns, which had a lot of good points, but also had a lot of crappy points too. You know, of course, we have Wolverine coming out. And also, you know, all the talk of the new Star Wars film has me kind of pumped up. You know, I know it's not coming soon, but I'm pretty excited about that. We have a lot of lesser known, you know, non-franchise type films that are coming out. Just a lot of great science fiction that I'm really excited to see. And it's just going to be a great summer for science fiction movies. And I mean, I love movies in general, but I'm really enjoying the, I don't know what it is. I mean, there's just so much good stuff, so many comic book related movies. And I'm just really stoked. I mean, Star Trek 2 really has me amped. I cannot wait to see what's going to happen with that. I see that the CW canceled Cult after 7 episodes. Part of the problem was that I knew this show was going to start, and I thought, hey, I'm going to watch that because I stopped watching The Following. I'm not going to, I don't want to spoil anything about The Following. It just, you know, it wasn't bad. It was just kind of, my problem with The Following is that, you know, there was kind of a cult there, and you find out that at the end of the day, there's more people in the cult than are out of the cult. And at that point, I'm like, okay, I no longer care that every single person you come across ends up being in a cult. Just kind of got on my nerves. I mean, there was some good acting, some okay acting in there, but just wasn't my thing. I just stopped caring. And, so I thought, well, you know, with the cult, it's going to be, I thought it'd be kind of more of the same, but I figured, you know, I'll give it a whirl and see if it's a little more scary or a little more different. And, it was kind of on my radar, and then just kind of, I don't know when it, I don't even know when it aired. And then one day I saw that it was airing, and it was like episode 5 or something. And I'm like, oh, well, I've already missed I mean, clearly this is going to be something you have to watch them again. I'm like, I've already missed it. So, well, I guess I'm not going to be watching that. I think that's what happened to a lot of people. They just kind of fell off the radar, you know, but we'll see what happens. With so much, with Netflix doing so much original material, it wouldn't surprise me if some of these shows weren't able to find a home on there somehow. You know, I mean, they're making some of their own shows, but it would be nice if you know, some of these creators are getting their show canceled before. And let's face it, with science fiction and supernatural and like those genre related shows, I mean, it takes everything seems to be serialized because they build. I mean, people have learned. Over a season, that is a chapter, and to build, you know, you have to watch it all. You're building it up. You're putting little bits and pieces of each character and building up a big arc with a big ending. And if you cannot get all the episodes in, then you're never going to get to the end of your story. And that was like Vampire Diaries. I watched the first like 3 episodes when it first aired, and I couldn't stand it. And then, actually, my buddy Derek Coward over Comic Book Noise kept urging me to go back. He's like, you got to go back and try watching it again. And usually, you know, I know with Derek, when he mentions something to me, it's like he mentions it once and then that's that. You know, he doesn't badger me into trying to try it out. And he mentioned to me like 2 or 3 times. And so I was like, okay, if he said this 3 times, then it's got to be, you know, I got to give it a shot. So I picked it up in like episode 3, and he told me what episode it started picking up, that the show started picking up. I think it was like 5 or 6, and he was right. By around 6, I was hooked. Unfortunately, this last season has been kind of, it's kind of like he loves me, he doesn't love me, the teenage angsty stuff, and it'd be great. These people are like in their 40s now, so the angsty stuff, it's like, okay, let's let it go and move on to, like, let's kill some stuff. But I still, you know, I have a couple of them on my DVR. I haven't really, and now I kind of watch it while I'm doing something else, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. It just, if it continues like this, then I end up saying, okay, well, I might DVR and watch it later, but I'm kind of done with it. I'm kind of feeling the same way with Supernatural. I have a few episodes on there and I'm thinking I'm done with it. The same thing with Revolution. So much potential for a show that I have no idea why I find some of it so boring. So many plot holes in that show. And for a television show that has all this time to tell its story, to have a plot hole, to me, is kind of unforgivable. They're looking, it's, you know, I'm sorry, writers, it's sloppy writing. The last episode, okay, we're going to get into spoiler territory here, so plug your ears for like 2 minutes, okay, and go. It's sloppy writing to, you have somebody who's a prisoner, and suddenly he gets a nail and is able to pick his handcuffs. We see nothing of that. There's no way they're going to have a nail under. They know how dangerous this guy is. Yeah, no, that's stupid. To have his son come in and have him spill the beans about where he needs to go, and knowing the how much they hate one another, and thinking his son's not going to tell the rebels, again, sloppy writing. You know, having this guy, you know, after he gets, you know, we don't have, it's so, everything is like so, we have violence, but we don't have blood and gore, but suddenly this guy escapes and he's stabbing people with machetes. Yeah, that doesn't fit the rest of the show. I mean, I'm okay with it, but it just, I'm like, wow, I'm like, that's weird, because, you know, we can see a war where we see people fall down. We don't see any blood or anything. But we have to show this kind of, I mean, not that you see much, but it's definitely graphic in your inner, you know, in your imagination. And there's not really, I don't know, it's just everything seems sloppy. It's not put together well. And anyway, a spoiler part over. Just kind of sloppy writing all around. And I'll tell you how bad it's gotten. I watched the episode, and then I had, then my buddy Shane texted me and said, hey, they finally explained how, why the power went out. And I stopped and I thought, and I texted him back. I said, how did it happen? So he sent me a link to a synopsis, and he said, if you really want to know. And I texted him back. I said, I'm almost embarrassed to say this, but I watched that entire episode, and I was kind of liking it because the action was amping up a little bit. And I don't remember him saying that. I mean, that's just how out of it I am. And I'm like, okay, well, that's just not cool. So I will continue to watch Revolution as long as we have some good action. But it's all over the map about what they want to do here. I'm so confused, and it's like we have these fast-paced trips. Like, you know, we have to go to this camp, and then like 2 seconds later, they're at that camp. You know, there's no like video, or we're not going with them on the voyage. Apparently, they had no trouble getting, you know, traveling, you know, 35 miles on donkeys or whatever. You know, we have none of this travel. Nothing happened on the road. Nothing. This whole, everybody's at war, but nothing happened. These people were just traveling on the open road. Okay. So they get to the camp or whatever, and then we're going to talk about our feelings, but we're going to go ahead and pan in and listen to every breath and everything that happens for the next 20 minutes. And I'm like, this is not what I want to watch. I mean, this is an action show that's just like, it's real heavy handed on the emotion and really light on everything that happens between, you know, these scenes. And I'm like, I don't know, you know. And I hate to complain about a show. I mean, I hate to be on here. I mean, because this is somebody's baby, and I don't want to sit here and rag on it. But I'm just saying, as me, the viewer, everything is very uneven. It's got so much great potential, and there's still time to save this show and get all your ducks in a row and start telling us a story that we care about. But we have to stop with the, let's talk about our feelings for half an hour. I don't care. Okay. You've been living in a world without freaking power for 15 years. People are killing each other left and right. Okay. It's time to sack up and toughen up. We don't need to, I don't need to hear about, you know, your past and, you know, how, you know, you didn't feel like you were adequate enough for your wife, or, you know, how you had a relationship, or, you know, how this, you know, and it's like, oh, you know, well, you know, I thought you were dead, but I wasn't really dead. So now I'm going to be pissed off at you because, you know, we're at war and you didn't know everything was going on in the whole entire world. And so now I'm going to be mad at you, because that makes sense in bizarro world. I just get kind of, anyway, I'm done complaining about that. I'll bitch about comic books now. So there was apparently Saga, which I talked to everybody about because I love this comic. Fantastic story. I love it. If you hate it, I don't care. I don't want to hear from you. The only reason I say this is because I've been reading some comments. You know, I thought we were past this part in the internet when somebody posts a story and you have to have some wanker who has to post something completely, has nothing to do with the topic. You know, I'm reading about, let me tell you the story. Anyhow. So first it popped up everywhere that Apple banned issue 12 because there was a gay sex scene. Okay. And if you've read Saga, there are quite a few sex scenes, and I'm not sure why, you know, they would pick on it for that. But due to Apple's past behavior, it was not hard to believe that they banned this book. They would not allow it to be presented on the app, you know, through the app or whatever. But as it turns out, it was Comixology, because that's how you would get the book, through Comixology. It was them. And they waited, you know, like a day and a half before they posted something and cleared everything up, because it was all over the place that Apple banned this book. And they were waiting to hear back from Apple and this and that. And as it turned out that Comixology defined Apple's rules a little bit differently than Apple had intended. They had assumed that the content would earn them a ban, earn the book a ban, so they decided not to put it up on through Apple. Now, in the meantime, Brian K. Vaughan had posted that he was sorry that this happened and blah, blah, blah. And he thought Apple was at fault too. And so this goes on before Comixology steps in. Don't get me wrong. It was good for Comixology to put out a statement, but man, did they drag their feet about this? How did they not know? I mean, they're part of every social network. How did they not know that people were already talking about this? How did they not step up right away and put an end to this? That, you know, I'm sorry. I know that, you know, on one hand, it was great for them to step up, you know, and I appreciate that. On the other hand, shame on you for taking so long. There was no reason for that. So the book is going to be available, which is a good thing because that's how I buy Saga, and I have no other way to do it other than through there. My other option, and I thought about this before the book, I actually haven't made my purchases for the day. I was going to do it yesterday, but I had to work all day yesterday and a little bit behind in my comic reading. But my other option, I don't have a comic book store, and I wasn't going to wait, you know, a week or whatever for it to come in the mail. I was going to go to someplace and order one comic and then pay $5 shipping for one comic. That's a little out of hand. But I need my Saga. I'm just loving the book so much. And so my other option was to pirate it, and then next time I was at a con, find them and give them $3 for it. That's exactly what I was going to do. I was going to put it in an envelope, mark it, tell my store, and give it to them so that they were able to get their cash, and I was able to read the book I wanted to read. Or, you know, pirate it and then go to Comixology and buy the book. I just wouldn't be able to read it on my iPad. I just have to, because I can't read. Their online viewer is crap. I hate it. I can't see anything on there. I just, my eyes are getting older and I hate it. So those are my options. But now I can just go ahead and buy it like I normally do. And I need to sit down when I get done doing this and make my my comic purchases for the week. Anyway, there's not a whole lot that I buy, but Saga is the book that I buy. And I buy the Valiant stuff. And I'll look around for the sale stuff, but I buy those, and then Injustice: Gods Among Us. I am addicted to this book. I love it so much. I know it's a really quick read. I mean, they say you're getting 20 some pages, when in reality, you're probably getting 12 pages for 99 cents, 12 regular comic pages. But it's worth it. I love it. I cannot recommend it enough. And the way that it's formatted, you can actually read this on your phone without any issues if you do the panel by panel. If you're reading on your iPad, I actually don't even do the panel by panel on my iPad. I read it a page at a time because it's in landscape format. So it's a real easy read, but I'm just loving the heck out of it. Anyhow, I think that's about all the things that I have to tell you about, complain about, and all that stuff. Let's talk about some upcoming Blu-rays and DVD releases for both the U.S. and the U.K. I have both of those. These are going to be for April 16th if you live in the U.S. You're going to get Repo Man on regular and Blu-ray. This is going to be a reissue. You're going to get Disney Nature, Wings of Life. Now, I'm not that I'm a big nature stuff, but I can tell you right now that some of the Disney stuff, the nature-related things that I've seen on Blu-ray are absolutely fantastic. The Haunting in Connecticut, The Django Unchained. You're going to get, I think we're getting Flash Gordon, the series. And I want to say that this is the sci-fi series, because I know that some people, from 2007. It's $10 for 22 episodes. That seems like it might almost be worth it if you're even remotely interested. If you remember, Flash Gordon was a series I was so pumped that sci-fi was going to do. And instead of making a good series, they made something that was just absolutely terrible, awful. I know some people liked it, but clearly you people are wrong, because it was awful. Iron Man, Rise of the Technivore, which is actually an anime from Madhouse. If I would have seen this, I liked it. That's all I'm going to say. And that seems to be about it for as far as like anything sci-fi related. If you live in the UK, these, of course, are going to be for April 8th. And we're going to see if you're going to get some Doctor Who. Now, I'm not sure why. you're going to get The Hobbit, the 17 variations of that. You know, obviously, there's the regular, there's the Blu-ray, the 3D, the Hobbit with a Kung Fu grip. And these seem to all be region free as well. Schindler's List, you're going to get a 20th anniversary edition of that. Being Human Series 5, this obviously is the UK version, is going to be available. And that seems to be about it. Why is there no Doctor Who? Why is there no Doctor Who? There should be Doctor Who. I get upset when there's not a Doctor Who release on a weekly basis. But you don't have one. Sorry, it's not my fault. The original House of Cards is going to be available on Blu-ray. I mention that because obviously Netflix is doing has done their own House of Cards series. You can get the Being Human series 1-5 box set on Blu-ray, and that is going to be £36. I'm not sure if that's a good price or not. I mean, I know a lot of you people out there in UK will let me know if that is a good deal or not. I kind of stopped watching the UK version. I think I watched the first episode of the second series and then kind of opted out because I just had too much on my plate at the time. And I wouldn't mind checking it out at some point in time, but I'm kind of really enjoying the American version right now. I mean, there's been a few slow episodes, but there's definitely been some really good episodes, including the season finale. I thought was pretty great. I really enjoyed that. And I like the way that they're tying the beginning of every season with the end of the season. You know, whatever gets started at the beginning, we're going to see some sort of progression, maybe not the end game, but some sort of progression of that at the end. And I appreciate the fact that they do that, telling a whole story. And I also wanted to mention that Defiance is going to premiere on Sci-Fi. This looks like it's going to be a really good show. I am really excited about this, and I am worried that it's not going to live up to my expectations. My expectations for anything is not very high, but I want another show that I can jump into that has some great, that creates an interesting world with some interesting technology, and that's what I'm looking for. And so I'm really kind of, I'm kind of pumped to see what they're going to do with that. Anyway, with all that being said, we're going to talk about some Fringe. So I got a new episode of Fringe all recorded here and ready to go. And so far, I've been right on the money with keeping this stuff weekly. Haven't run into much of a problem. Let me go ahead and play this, and then I'll be back after we discuss some Fringe. This week's episode is titled Ability. It originally aired on February 10th of 2009. It is episode 14 from season 1. Now, a number of people are... The beginning of this is the crime that we're looking at. Is people are infected with something that is making all their orifices in their face close over. And it's quite an interesting effect. There's a really cool scene where a gentleman buys a newspaper at a news vendor on the street, pays with a $2 bill. Apparently, whatever virus or microbe or whatever that infects these people is carried on a $2 bill. The newspaper guy takes it, and we get to see his face just kind of close over. It's a really interesting effect. It's kind of creepy. It's like his skin is dripping from like his eyelids and stuff, and then next thing you know, everything is closed over, and of course, he can't breathe, so he dies. The bigger part of this episode is that we look back on David Robert Jones's escape, and we see it from a different point of view and a little bit more of it. The aftermath of him escaping, and it all boils down to this episode is about him and his interaction with Olivia. We're not quite sure what's going on or where it's coming from or what his plan is, but as the episode plays out, we learn more about him and a little bit more about Olivia. With that being said, the first clip that I have is of Olivia coming in and talking to Walter. Or wanting to talk to Walter and talking to Peter and talking about how Jones escaped.
Hey.
Morning.
Is your father about?
Right here. Why don't you ask him what he's doing?
I'd rather not. Listen, do you remember that prisoner Jones I went to see in...
In Germany, right?
He escaped.
Good for him. How?
Nobody knows. It makes no sense. The German authorities came to see me last night.
How come when nobody knows and it doesn't make sense, they come to us?
Well, what we do know is that Jones was working with Mitchell Loeb.
Oh, I remember Loeb. That's the guy that stole my invention?
Yeah, I'm gonna go and talk to him now. But can you describe to me again what you made? What Lope was stealing?
And why don't you tell her the truth this time? He kind of sugarcoated last time around.
You did? Why? Is it something that could have helped Jones escape?
It was a transportation device. I called it Disray, coined based on the premise disintegration, reintegration, disray.
Are you saying that you created
a teleportation system? Yeah, except for this one's meant to travel through time. How's that?
Assuming someone could solve the considerable problems, coming through, arriving, would require weeks of decompression in a barometric tank. And if you survived that, based on what would happen next, you'd likely wish you hadn't.
So you're saying that Jones, in theory, could have zapped himself out of prison?
Yes.
Now, I do love the sound of disgust in Walter's voice because he's not real happy with simplifying the explanation, you know, and obviously he wants to elaborate a little bit more and is just kind of frustrated that nobody understands it, you know, down to the very scientific details. The next clip is Olivia. They're trying to locate David Robert Jones. And, of course, the only real clue that they have is of the rogue agent. Remember, we had the rogue agent, Mitchell Loeb, and he is getting ready to, I don't know if he's being transferred to another prison or what, and or being transferred to prison. It seems in one part, like this takes place directly after, but some of it seems like some time has passed. So I'm not quite sure, but anyway, he's being transferred and Olivia stops and you know, meets them outside and has a discussion with him trying to get some information. She wants to know where Jones is at, and she offers him a very, not a great deal, but some sort of deal.
I know about David Robert Jones. I know that you helped him escape and that you kidnapped me on that same night. You know where Jones is.
You're not someone I really want to work with.
Your transfer order to Wallens Ridge State Prison. You know what that place is like, Mitchell. You know what they're gonna do to you? What it's gonna be like that first night, the second.
Doesn't matter if you find Jones or not. He's just a part of the army. What was written will come to pass. Nothing you do can stop that. Nothing.
Agent Dunham.
It's me. Get the bishops and meet me at Boston General.
Now, of course, Mitchell Loeb doesn't want to work with Agent Dunham because she did shoot his wife in the head. And I mean, not that if she shot her anywhere else, he'd want to work with her, but it was pretty violent. Anyhow, so she's not really getting any information there, and she's trying to track down this person. And in the meantime, the case pops up. So what we're going to see the next clip is the team going to the hospital, and Burrell's explaining about the man who had no health issues, you know, for the most part, and suddenly everything, you know, his entire face closed up and he was no longer to breathe, and the poor guy suffocated to death.
His only prior physical conditions were high cholesterol and a weak bladder. According to witnesses, the whole thing happened in less than 2 minutes.
Ceramide act as a signaling molecule in skin. They control how the cells grow and differentiate. Two thoughts come to mind. The first, that this affliction might have been caused by a mutation, changing these lipids to recognize and seal any and all orifices. Did they check his anus and penis?
You think we could get the answer to that question without me in the room?
What was the other thought?
Sorry?
You said two thoughts came to mind.
Oh, yes. The other was coffee cake. Tiny pebbles of cinnamon sugar.
Once again, my father.
You know what this is.
You think Jones?
Peter, help me with this.
You talked to Lou. Did he give you anything?
Maybe. But nothing that relates to this exactly.
Well, I'm not convinced this is Jones' work. And what interest would he have in a newsstand operator?
That's what we're going to find out. Peter, you got a sec?
When I saw Lowe, he said something. That Jones was only doing what had been written.
Meaning what? Written where?
Well, I didn't know, but we've never known what Jones's group, CFT, stood for. Maybe it's not the name of their organization. What if it's the name of their Bible?
Interesting.
So I called a contact at the German authorities and asked him to search any known document with those initials.
Did he find anything?
Yes, he did.
Zerstörung durch Fortschritt der Technologie.
ZFT. Scroll down.
Destruction by advancement of technology.
It's a self-published anonymous manuscript on their records only because it was recovered as evidence in a police raid in an unrelated case.
They're sending it to us?
They would be if it hadn't been destroyed 10 years ago. So, I was hoping that you might have one of your weird connections.
Weird connections?
They're always a little weird.
Well, you're always a little weird.
What do you think? Come on.
I think I got a weird connection.
Now, a lot of the weird connections that Peter has kind of fade out after season one. I mean, we might have something in season two that I don't remember, but it's kind of season one. Like, once we hit season two, the show kind of coalesces into just the core group, and there's not a whole lot of outside influences going on. You know, we don't really talk much about Olivia's parents or Peter's past or any of the friends that he made or any of the, like, you know, sketchy underworld type folks he might have known. It's mostly around the core group. And but in season one, I kind of enjoy these, and I kind of enjoy the fact that we see Olivia. I think it's a really organic growth from her part, because she's kind of somebody who is a by the book kind of person. Not that she's uptight at all, but just that she believes in doing it by the book, and realizing when she's doing these fringe investigations that she might need something else above and beyond. That doing everything by the book, although it might look good on paper, it's not going to save the people who are in jeopardy, or the people who have been damaged by whatever they're investigating, or their family, as the families that have been killed, etc. So she needs a little bit of help. So she's willing to, I can't really say it's bending the rules, but trying to get the information from sketchy sources, so to speak. Anyway, the next clip is kind of interesting because everybody is on a manhunt trying to find Mr. Jones, and this happens.
This is Broyles. I need a search warrant authorized.
Sir?
Yeah, a warehouse in Ulster.
Sir, this can't wait.
What is it?
There's a man downstairs. Says his name is David Robert Jones.
Everybody down!
Everybody down!
Down, down, down. Don't move! Jones, freeze!
I will speak only with Agent Olivia Dunham.
Okay, I've made it pretty clear how much I dislike Mr. Samford, right? And, you know, there's certain things that have happened where you can see a little bit of growth of his character, and maybe him kind of opening up to appreciating Olivia for being a good agent and trying to drop his prejudice. I pulled this Nick sound clip for a lot of different reasons, but one of the reasons is, and I know that we all like to hate him, and I don't want to be his defender, but I dig this sound clip because it's this situation where Olivia kind of stands up to him a little bit, and he has a very valid point at the end of the clip. He wants her to go on this raid, and he has a very valid point, and it shows that he's kind of getting away from Bean Counter to focusing on, you know, the case and all the things that have to go into it in order to make it stick and to make these things work, and, you know, the law and things like that. And I just kind of liked it because it showed that the guy is not just some schmuck on a vendetta, that he does in fact have some skills when it comes to the FBI and investigative work. And I liked it for that reason. And because we know Olivia because we follow her around during the series. So we know her. We kind of know where she's coming from. We don't really know him. We just know the bits and pieces that the other characters have told us about. We haven't had any alone time. We're following Sanford around, learning about him and his life and what makes him tick. And I like this clip because, you know, we kind of see some growth in Olivia too, where she kind of pauses and realizes that, it seems to me that she realizes that he's kind of right, you know, that, you know, although she may not like him and she has her own prejudices, and what he's saying does make sense. But that's one of the reasons I pulled the clip. I rather enjoyed this one.
And he just turned himself in.
2 hours ago. Said he'd only speak to Agent Dunham, hasn't said a word since.
Anything else? Anything on how he escaped from prison?
No information. Just another question. A key.
What key?
It was found on him when he turned himself in. There are no markings on it. Forensics is doing their thing. He wanted us to find it.
He wants to talk to me. Let me in there.
Jones doesn't get to dictate the terms of his captivity.
He wouldn't be captive if it wasn't under his terms. The only reason Jones is here is because he wants to be.
Well, that may be the case, but the United States doesn't negotiate with terrorists.
And that's exactly the kind of arrogance he's expecting.
What did you say?
The man was clever enough to Star Trek himself out of a maximum security German prison, elude Interpol, arrive in Boston, and get himself apprehended simply because he liked the idea. He's expecting us to reject his request.
And your choice is what? Give Jones what he wants to demonstrate that we can be anti-dogmatic?
I don't think that's what you're saying, is it, Agent Dunham?
Since he arrived in town, an innocent man was killed in a shocking and gruesome way.
We don't know that was Jones.
It was Jones, and he has more planned.
And you know that how?
I don't know how to justify a hunch.
Sanford, I don't see any harm.
This isn't a gentleman's club, Miss Dunham. Mr. Jones doesn't just get to choose the pretty one. You want to get him to talk? Join the raid on that warehouse in Austin. See what you find.
How is that
relevant? Well, because right now, he's just an escaped prisoner. But if he's playing games, as you say, I doubt he's here to help us. To show me some hard evidence that connects him to that incident downtown.
Now, in the next clip, Sanford tries to get Mr. Jones to talk to him. And, you know, Mr. Jones still does not want to converse with him. And he lets him know that in no uncertain terms.
I'd like to ask you some questions.
Oh, I believe I made myself clear. There is another I wish to speak to.
I'm afraid Agent Dunham
is preoccupied.
So lucky you, you get May. Well, you don't look well.
Which is why I was hoping to speak with Agent Dunham as soon as possible. I prefer to avoid any additional unnecessary deaths. Now, when Agent Dunham comes to see me, I'll require the following items. A standard walkie-talkie with removable crystals, a metallic ballpoint pen, and an eyeglass repair kit. An analog wristwatch. Your watch would do.
You sure you don't need anything else?
Quite sure.
Now, the next clip is a rather long clip, but Olivia and Mr. Jones finally have their sit down, and Mr. Jones is going through the paper bag that has all the items in it that he requested. And here's where things get a little bit interesting.
Where are we?
We've got audio. Visual coming up right now.
Yeah. Moving closer on this. I want to record every twitch.
Oh, finally. Welcome, face.
A colleague of mine just died. He was 27 years old. He was due to get married next month.
Yes, I tried to prevent that. Your agent Harris needed some convincing.
Here I am.
Have you bought the items I requested?
This will only take a moment.
Go tighter on this in the hands. What the hell is he doing? It's a $1,000 watch.
Whoa!
What's happening in there?
I don't know.
Managed to get us some privacy. It's just you and me now. But we haven't much time.
You were responsible for what happened to Thomas Avery.
Simply the stage setter. An example that doesn't need to be followed.
Well, that implies that you're planning something else.
Something far worse, yes.
What is it?
First, I need your services.
What the hell do you want?
I need you to pass a test.
Get down the mountain. The device he's made is blocking our surveillance equipment.
You can't hurt us, Everett. He's just trying to show you who's in charge.
When I turned myself in, there was a key in my pocket, as I'm sure you're aware. Take the key, which I assume is in forensics. Go to Salem at the amusement park on Policy Street. I've left something there for you.
Oh. You need medical attention.
All the assistance in this world could not cure me, Miss Dunham. It seems that when one is dematerialized on a molecular level and then reassembled, there are certain unadvertised side effects. But who knows? Perhaps this task I have for you could lead to something that might help me.
Tell me about the attack you're planning.
I wouldn't call it that. I'd call it an insurance policy.
I don't care what you'd call it.
Even as we speak, a white cargo van is transporting an explosive device capable of killing several hundred people in the manner of the newspaper salesman and your deceased FBI colleague.
When is it set to go off?
16 hours from now.
Before anything, you are going to disable
no,
that.
No, you are. But first, there's the matter of the key.
That's enough. I want you out of this room.
Don't worry, Miss Dunham. If I wanted to harm you, I would have. Long ago. Apologies about the watch.
Jones is planning a device somewhere capable of killing more people in the same way that guy from the newsstand died. He won't say where or when, but we need every white van rented within the last 48 hours tracked down. In the meantime, I need 2 hours alone.
Why? Where are you going?
To get a massage. I'll tell you when I get back.
Now, Olivia is en route in the next clip to try to find this package that Mr. Jones has left for her. What it ends up being is a big box that has a whole bunch of light bulbs on it. And we will explain more about that in the clip. The next clip is kind of long, but this is a very meaty clip for the episode. And this is a very meaty clip for season one because there's a lot of information packed in here. So please bear with me.
Hey, it's me. Where are we at?
We know how the folks are ending up faceless. It's a powdered toxin that's absorbed through the skin. It triggers a hyperactivity in the protein responsible for scar tissue. You want any more detail than that?
Not really. Did you hear that Jones turned himself in?
Yeah, I did. You get anything?
Yeah, that is crazy. And he's planning on using that toxin again and soon. How's Walter coming with the antidote?
He's working on it. He says, and I quote, it'll be ready when it's ready and not a moment before.
Great. Anything more in the manuscript that might suggest what Jones' endgame is?
Well, it reads like a happy combo between an anti-science manifesto and a call to arms.
Call to arms against whom?
Exactly. I'll call you back when I get to the good part.
Yeah, please do. Maybe it'll help us figure out where this next attack is going to be. I'll be back as soon as I get the package Jones left me.
Okay.
Was that Olivia?
Yeah. Where's the manuscript?
Is she bringing a coffee cake?
No, she's not getting food. Have you seen the manuscript that I was reading earlier?
It's fascinating, isn't it? I was just reading it whilst sitting on the crapper.
Please, no more information than that. Can I have it back?
I must read you one excerpt.
Great, well, grab the blankie. It's nap time.
We think we understand reality, but our universe is only one of many. The unknown truth is that the way to travel between them has already been discovered by beings much like us, but whose history is slightly ahead of our own. The negative aspects of such visitations will be irreversible both to our world and to theirs. It will begin with a series of unnatural occurrences, difficult to notice at first, but growing, not unlike a cancer, until a simple fact becomes undeniable. Only one world will survive. And It'll either be us or them.
Miss Dunham, I know how this appears, that I've sent you quite a distance to pick up a box of children's games. But what I've hidden here is not a game at all. You're holding an evaluation system, a series of tests designed to cultivate specific, innate skills present in particular individuals. Do the first test only. Complete it successfully and come back to see me. Do this and no one else will die.
I got the instructions.
So Jones is threatening to kill hundreds of people unless I take a test.
No, unless you pass a test.
Fine. What does my passing a test have to do with Jones killing innocent people?
In a word, insanity. You can't pose rational questions when you're dealing with a guy like Jones.
Indeed. And whatever Mr. Jones' true goal may be, we only have 8 hours left until his next attack.
Test 1 of 10, by the way. Turn switch on. The recruit sits no more than 24 inches from the device, but cannot touch the light board. Recruit focuses on light board. The object of the test is to systematically shut down the light so that ultimately none are illuminated.
How?
Using all your magic powers, I guess.
It's curious. The instructions refer to the recruit. The author of the manuscript uses the same term. Many warriors of the inevitable confrontation are among us now. But before they can be considered soldiers, they must be regarded as recruits. And the expectation must be that they shall be unwilling.
So I'm supposed to just turn these lights off by looking at them?
Well, it wouldn't be much of a test if we could just take out the battery.
Fine.
Now, Olivia is trying to use her mind to shut off the lights, but it's really not working. Now would be a good time to tell you where the bald man's at. And at the very beginning, when the gentleman gets the $2 bill at the newsstand and his orifices start to close over, one of the people he stumbles into is an observer. And as always, it took a screen capture, and that will be included with the podcast to help you find the person. The glyphs for this episode spell out Olivia, and I always love the use of the butterfly because it's a cool glyph. But and of course this episode is very Olivia centric. Now, and I realize I forgot to mention this, but during the initial interview, you know, obviously you can hear in the clip that Mr. Jones was able to devise a device with all the crap that they gave him, all the bizarre items, and give him and Olivia some silence, you know, cut off all surveillance. So Olivia wants to have another conversation with him. And of course, Sanford Harris is not very happy that she wants to have another conversation because he's worried that the Jones will want to use that device again to give them some privacy, and he doesn't want to do that. And of course, Olivia's objective is she doesn't care about all these rules. She just wants to figure out what is going on.
I will not let him use that device again. If you're going to meet with Jones, I want full surveillance this time.
Sir, the last time you got your way, we lost a good agent. Do you really want to get in the way again? We have less than 7 hours before something truly horrific will happen, something that I'm trying to stop. And for some reason, Jones is out to get me. So, sir, would you please let me handle this? I got your test kit.
You didn't bring it?
No, I didn't need to, because
your reluctance is to be expected.
I know what you're doing, Mr. Jones.
I'm trying to get you to pass test number one.
I know about the manuscript, the manifesto, ZFT. I know that you believe that there's some kind of war coming.
You read it?
And that you're recruiting warriors. That's the word you use, isn't it?
You don't believe you're worthy?
I believe that everybody, maybe even you, is entitled to their own belief system. But somehow you got me into your head.
Somehow. Yes. You are among those treated with a cortexifan. It's why we had you taken. We needed confirmation. Something which requires a spinal tap. The next step, had you not escaped, was to convince you of this.
I have never been treated with Cortexafan. I haven't even heard of it.
You wouldn't have.
Well, I don't believe you, Mr. Jones. What I believe is that you've created some ridiculous scenario where people's lives rely on me attempting and failing what is obviously an impossible task.
The task is hardly impossible.
I will not let these people die because of some stupid game that you're playing.
This is no game.
You need to cooperate, Mr. Jones.
No, Miss Dunham. It is you who needs to cooperate.
Mr. Jones?
Pulse is slowing down to 50 beats per minute.
Get him up there. Astrid! Set up the EKG. Is this a patient? Walter, put the cow away, would you?
What is this place?
It's a freak show.
Thanks for your help. Thank you.
Now, of course, they take David Robert Jones to Walter Bishop's lab because, I mean, let's face it, he's going to be the best person to try to figure out what's going on here. And he did design a device, so maybe he'll be able to help. In the meantime, Olivia is trying to do some research on his Cortexafan. Now, this is important, people. This is the whole Cortexafan trials are important. So this is a big moment, and there's going to be some fallout from the information she gets here. Not in this episode, but there will be some fallout. So anyhow, she reaches out and tries to find out some information about this to see exactly what he's talking about, because obviously Mr. Jones is having some trouble speaking right now because he's having some issues of his own. I'm not sure if he's in a coma or what's going on, but he's kind of out of commission as they try to figure out what exactly is going on with him and how to stop it from happening. And this is the conversation she has on the phone trying to find out about the Cortexafan trials.
No, of course they did. Why am I not surprised? Thanks, Charlie.
Anything?
Yeah, that drug Jones claims is in my body, Cortexafan. It's a drug patented but not approved by the FDA.
Patented to whom?
To Massive Dynamic.
Why am I not surprised?
That's what I just said. Jones?
Walter's replenishing his fluids right now, but he's still going to have to give him a full exam before we even know if you can wake him back up.
Look, I'm going to go find out what I can about Cortexafan, but in the meantime, he's actually expecting me to be able to do it.
To do what?
Test number one, the flashing lights. Jones won't cooperate unless I pass the test. You think we can trick him?
What are you asking me to do? You want me to open up the light box?
You could see what you could do.
And of course, Peter does try to see what he can do. And in the meantime, Olivia contacts Nina Sharp to see if she knows any information about the Cortexafan trials. And as far as I'm concerned, you can never get enough of Nina in these episodes. And I like the fact that Nina comments on her arm, because we haven't really, other than the first episode where they probably blew their CGI budget on showing that fake arm she had, we haven't really talked much about it or, you know, acknowledged the fact that she does have an artificial limb, a very cool one at that.
Is everything all right?
My hand, it's been acting up. I need to have it looked at. Oh, yes, I recall this. Cortexafan. It was part of a clinical trial of a drug that Dr. Bell created in 81.
What is it, if you don't mind?
Dr. Bell theorized that the human mind at birth is infinitely capable, and that every force it encounters, social, physical, intellectual, is the beginning of a process he referred to as limitation, a diminishing of that potential.
And Cortexafan?
It was meant to limit that limitation, to prevent the natural shrinking of that brain power.
To prevent, not undo.
Meaning?
That the drug was administered to children.
Yes. The drugs were extensively animal tested. They were harmless to the children who received them. Unfortunately, they were also unsuccessful. Dr. Bell abandoned his research on Cortexafan in 1983.
And where were the trials?
Dr. Bell conducted the trials himself at Ohio State University, Worcester campus.
Nowhere else?
No. Why? If you don't mind me asking.
Nothing. It's good to know. No matter what Jones believes, I was never given that drug. William Bell conducted his trials in Ohio. In 1981, I was three, living in Jacksonville, Florida. My dad was stationed at the naval base there.
That's great. In other news, Walter thinks he's going to be able to revive Jones soon, and
I was able to reprogram the light box. We should be able to fake Jones out.
I knew you could do it. I'll see you soon.
Now would be a good time to point out that this is a great episode for Olivia and Peter and their relationship. The relationship has always been very organic. I've talked about that in the very beginning of the show before I started doing the episode breakdowns. You know, the thing that I liked about the show, one of the things that sold me on the show, is the people seem very real. And there's not just like some leads they threw together in a room and said, okay, well, these two are going to be, you know, an item and these people are going to have a relationship and et cetera, et cetera. It's very organic the way that their relationship builds. You know, they started out very opposed to one another and have slowly grown to trust one another. And whether, you know, the relationship turns to love or not, the point is that they've grown this trust, and that's important for the show. And I've made comments that this reminds me very much of the Delenn and Sheridan relationship on Babylon 5. And one of the reasons I really like that show is because, again, they were opposites and actually kind of, rivals. And they grew together very organically. And I really enjoyed that relationship. And we got to see that happen a little bit at a time in every episode. And the same thing is happening here between Olivia and Peter. Nothing seems rushed. Everything seems very natural and organic, the way everything comes together and the way that they both resolve their trust issues. Anyhow, the next clip is Mr. Jones wakes up and Olivia is trying to make coming to an understanding that if she passes this light box test, that he will give her the information of, where the bomb is downtown or whatever catastrophe awaits her, and she will hopefully be able to stop it.
Mr. Jones, we have 2 hours before your planned attack hits, and I think I passed test number one.
Dr. Bishop, that your extraordinary work, never had the pleasure of making your acquaintance.
I locked the teleporter away for a reason, one of which you are now experiencing.
Nevertheless, it is an honor.
Jones, I passed the test. You'll tell us everything we need in order to stop whatever it is you're planning.
That was always the deal.
Well, of course, you passed the test because Peter was able to rig the light box so that there was no way that she could fail the test. And then they have this exchange.
Well done, Miss Dunham. Thank you.
Your turn.
Indeed. 923 Church Street, 47th floor. You better hurry.
This is Agent Dunham. I need immediate evac. 923 Church Street. There's a device on the 47th floor. Nicely done.
Good performance.
I need these streets cleared now. Anyone within a 4-block radius has to move. Go! Double time!
Hey, where are we?
Building's about 70% clear. We looked up. They're undergoing renovations, so not all the floors are occupied.
So, the device?
This one's a real mess. Bomb Squad says they can't move it or defuse it.
Why?
Says they've never seen wiring like this before.
Oh, my God.
What the drama is here is that basically it is another light box, only much bigger with many more lights, and that's what's attached to the bomb. And so everybody's like, hey, you know, what's this all about? Now, I'm going to have a couple of clips I'm going to try to string together here. I'm going to purposely put little breaks in between them so you know what's what here. the first clip, of course, is of Olivia calling and trying to talk to Jones to find out, you know, how to stop this. And there was a nice exchange between Peter and Olivia that I rather enjoyed, so I'm going to include that clip as well.
Agent Farnsworth.
Hey, it's me. That son of a bitch knew what we were doing.
What?
He knew that we were faking him out. Is he still conscious?
Barely.
Put him on.
It's Olivia.
Hello, you.
I can't do this.
I remain confident that you can.
Look, you know what I did before? It wasn't real.
Yes, I know, Miss Dunham.
Before they can be considered soldiers, they must be regarded as recruits, and the
expectation must be that they shall be unwilling.
Mr. Jones, I am willing. I am willing, but I am not able.
Olivia, we gotta go.
There's only one way to disable that device, and you know what that is.
Okay. You think that I'm valuable? Valuable enough to kidnap, to try and train?
You are a rare commodity. True.
Okay, if you don't deactivate this device, I'm gonna die, which means that your rare commodity is gone.
But I have one thing, Miss Dunham, that you do not.
I have faith in you. There is no red wire, no blue, only black. Cut any one of them and the device blows.
Try and remove it and the device blows.
And if those lights are still on when the timer hits zero, the device blows.
There is only one way out, and it's you.
I'm not doing this with you, Olivia. You're out of your mind.
Now, Peter has been a fairly self-sufficient individual for the majority of his life, right? You know, he hasn't really had a father. He's kind of been on his own. He's gotten these schemes and things, but he's always been kind of a tough guy. Not like a tough guy like, you know, I'm going to kick your ass tough guy, but a tough guy like internally, you know. And I could not decide. I don't know. I have the next clip I'm going to play. I'm still trying to think it over. It seems as though he's just entirely shocked that Olivia, of course, is able to turn off the lights with her mind, which is kind of creepy. But he, you know, he said he was going to leave, and then he didn't leave. He couldn't leave. He come back and, you know, for her. And, well, he come back to die because she couldn't do it. They were going to blow up, and that was the end of that. But at any rate, you know, he came back, and then he just seemed so blown away that she was able to do it. And it's kind of out of character for him, and I can't decide. At first, I really didn't like it, but then I just thought, well, maybe it's just that one, like that inner thing that we don't get to see of him very often, that sense of wonder that Walter was worried that he had lost. And I'm going to kind of go with that. I can't, you know, I can't blame the acting, and I don't know. It was just really out of character for him, and I just kind of had trouble, you know, after I've watched these episodes, you know, I've watched the entire series, and I've watched the episodes multiple times, at least getting to this point, and it just seemed really out of character. But the more I think about it, the more I decided that I think it's just a matter of us not, you know, that inner wonder that, you know, Walter's been talking about. I think that that's what we're seeing, the fact that he cannot believe that she was able to do it. Anyway, I'm going to shut up and play the clip. Jesus.
You did it. What was that? How did you do that?
I don't know.
Farnsworth. Yes, sir. Thank you. We will.
Wait.
She did it, didn't she?
Seems she did.
My God.
Okay, the next clip is of Walter and Astrid. They have a brief conversation here. Now, I got to say that the Walter and Astrid, I don't get enough of their interacting. You know, they're two great characters, obviously, and I have my issues with Astrid not getting enough screen time, although without her, you'd have to have somebody in there, and I really dig her character, and I wish she did get more screen time, but there's just not enough of these little conversations, and she's much more intelligent than she gets credit for, or than you initially think, I think, in the series, because the fact that she does know all these different things, but she's kind of the gopher for everybody. You know, I don't mean it in a negative term, but she just kind of does everything. You know, she's the one who fills that void of, you know, we need food, you know, we need medicine, we need, you know, this device, we need that device, we need, you know, all these different things. And, but I can't get enough of their interaction. And, you know, I still have my issues with the fact that, you know, Walter earlier on injected her and knocked her out. And I just think that, that trust issue would have lasted a little bit longer. But anyway, here's this clip.
So in all the excitement of today, I forgot to say something. I haven't overlooked the fact that you actually created a teleportation machine.
Well, I suppose I did.
Which, despite the fact that using it kills you, is pretty damn cool.
Kills you? It does something unthinkable, but it doesn't kill you.
Now that is rather ominous. The couple of the questions that I had was, you know, I wanted to know what are the other tests for the recruits. And what, you know, well, I can't mention that one. So that's a little bit further up and I don't want to spoil anything. I would like to know more of the physical hazards of being teleported as well and see what, you know, we're going to see some of the hazards, but I wish that there was more information given to us so we kind of knew what to expect. Now, of course, we have this final clip. Because this is the big one. This is kind of what sets things up. I'm just going to play the clip, and it's all kind of self-explanatory, but it's a really big step in our big chunk of Fringe that we have this information and we know what has been done to Olivia.
Hello?
Agent Dunham, Nina Sharp. Hands back to normal.
Good for you.
I was curious about that question you asked, whether there were other places where Cortexafan was tested.
Yes?
There was, it turns out, a second clinical trial, though much smaller than the one in Ohio.
There was?
Yes, in Jacksonville, Florida, at a military base. Agent Dunham.
Thank you very much for calling.
You're most welcome. Have a good night.
Now, of course, you know, that's where Olivia's from, and obviously she was treated with this drug. Now, the episode ends with Walter pulling out an old typewriter and typing the word ability. And the last character, which is the Y, is raised. Now, what does that mean? Well, we are going to find out in future episodes, but this next chunk of episodes are a big deal, and it's going to really try the bonds of this group. And it's kind of interesting how everything has come full circle. And, you know, I'll talk more about that and how it's just kind of bizarre that Walter ends up meeting Olivia, you know, or Olivia ends up using Walter to get him, you know, to investigate the Fringe cases, and that, you know, she comes across him and realizes he needs to be taken from the institution and all that, because you find out that they've known each other, you know, that they've met before. Anyway, the episode was Ability. It is a really, you know, I know there's a lot of audio I pulled for this episode, but this is a big episode for the season. I mean, this is one of those episodes where there's a lot of information, and where a lot of, you know, a lot of the breadcrumbs have led from the other episodes. It's kind of all led up to here. And, we get a lot of information this episode of the way the series is going to go and how important some of these people are. And, you know, we're going to have more Jones. We're going to have, you know, more of the other main characters. And this is kind of, the whole Cortexafan thing is really going to play out really big, in a lot of the seasons. But anyway, I don't want to go into that because I don't want to get into too spoilerific territory, you know, as far as upcoming episodes. The name of the episode was Ability. It was episode 14 from season 1. Feedback, as always, is appreciated. Now, some of you might notice that I'm a little bit amped up for this episode. Well, one, I've been kind of dying to carve out a section of my day to record. Two, the last 3 weeks at work, I mean, I love my job, don't get me wrong. I'm not one of those people that, you know, complain about their work. I love the work. But man, it's just been some long days. I've had a lot going on, and just been some long weeks and some long days. I got a couple 14-hour days in there, and I haven't worked a week under 50 hours in the last few, and I thought this week would be different, but no. We had some stuff happen yesterday, and I was there all day, and I'm like, man, I'm like, I start getting the shakes if I don't get down to recording it and get my sci-fi out there to get some feedback and get some discussions going, because I just love it all so much. But that and the spring weather has got me so pumped. I've been waiting for some decent weather. And the weatherman, who's always wrong, I'm usually bitter about that, but he's been calling for rain. We've had very little rain. So congratulations on being wrong, you know, but it's been wrong in a good way. So heck, I even cut my grass. I got my garden all tilled up, and been outside. I've done 5 miles a day for the last several days. I feel good. Bought a new bike. I'm like a child on my bike. I live right by a hill, so I got to work my ass off to get up to the top of the hill. But then coming down the hill, I'm just screaming and carrying on because, well, I like to make a spectacle of myself. And my wife just sits there on the front porch shaking her head at me. But hey, she married me. It's all her fault. Anyhow, so I've been having a blast. I'm feeling good. And my next thing is I am dying to get out and take some pictures. As soon as everything gets a little bit less drab, I can get out with my camera. And as you know, I mean, my photo of the day project, I'm kind of falling behind a little bit because of my past couple really busy days at work. And the photo of the day project, you know, don't get me wrong. It was just, I would want to present a photo a day. It's just whatever it happens to catch my eye, whatever interests me. But I was kind of aiming for a more artistic experience this year. And it hasn't turned out that way. I've taken more photos with my iPhone than I have with my SLR. And not what I was aiming to do. But sometimes I just come across things that are kind of cool. Because like, I might take a nice picture of something. Or I might take a picture of a book and say, hey, you know what? I picked up this book today and I love it. You know, so it's not, you know, I don't think it's ever boring. Okay. There's always something cool. But it's, you know, I'm really pump for the spring weather. I've just been getting a lot done around the house the last few days. I mean, just little chores here and there I've been trying to get done. And I'm feeling good, feeling great. Just wanted to share that with everybody rather than, you know, coming here and complaining about when things don't go right. Everything's going good. I feel good and still keeping up with my 100 pushups a day. And I haven't even hit the 100 days yet, and I'm already in for 12,000. So I'm going for 50,000 for the year. And then damn it, I'm getting a t-shirt. I haven't designed one yet. I need some help with that, but I'm going to figure something out because I'm getting a t-shirt, man. I have a t-shirt that says I did 50,000 pushups this year. What'd you do? You know, something like that. But anyway, I just got to figure out the graphic. I mean, what kind of graphic would be cool on a pushup t-shirt? I'm telling you guys out there so you can tell me what a good graphic would be so I can figure something out. You know what I'm saying? All right. I will talk to everybody next time. Still digging the fringe. Still want the feedback about everything I talked about. Summer movies. What are you pumped to see? What do you want to see? Let's get some audio feedback. Come on, people. I know all of you have cell phones or computers or something that can record audio. Cassette player, whatever. Send me a cassette tape. Whatever. Send it my way. Send me an MP3. Say, hey, I'm looking forward to this. And I'm looking forward to Superman because I like Men in Tights. The end. That's good enough. Let's get it on. Come on. Bring it on. I want to get some feedback going for the show. And with that being said, I like Men in Tights. This is Aaron for the Sci-Fi Dig Podcast. Over and out.